I love stories of reinvention, and I love interviewing people who have gone through their own reinvention. And in this case, it's a little bit meta because I'm speaking with an author today who has gone through becoming an author through some reinvention and then wrote about someone, a midlife woman, with her own reinvention. We're going to talk with the author, Lindsay Goldstein, about her process, her experience becoming this person today, and about her book, Gap Year. Welcome to Surfing the Quicksand. I'm your host, Kathy Vines. I love stories about reinvention, and you will probably find as many of those episodes on Surfing the Quicksand as I can stand. And I love it when I get kind of a fun story around reinvention that has piqued my attention and gotten me to think a little bit differently about my own life and paths I've taken or maybe didn't take along the way. And this week, I'm introducing you to an author, Lindsay Goldstein, who has written a book called The Gap Year. And I always think about gap year as being, for kiddos who just graduate high school before they start college. But this book is a novel that challenges the idea that even women in our 40s or 50s, or quite frankly, anyone at any age, can take a gap year. The book is her debut novel, and it follows a little bit of inspiration from her own life, especially when the pandemic brought her career to a screeching halt as a physical therapist, and her primary role of motherhood had her kind of thinking about what her own identity was. So we're going to talk a little bit about the book Gap Year. We're going to talk about Lindsay and how she got to become this author after already being a published writer of essays in lots of different organizations. And she is going to help us think through reinvention on every term. Welcome, Lindsay.
Thank you so much for having me, Kathy.
I've read the book. I really enjoyed the book, and so I do want to get into there.
Thank you.
And we will start by talking about you and your journey as an author in the first place. So I just kind of mentioned that you had been writing essays for a long time. I know you have a Substack. I know you're published in the New York Times and lots of other places as an essayist. Tell me a little bit about you and writing in the first place.
So yes, I had not been writing. I did introduce myself to storytelling by working in the film industry in my 20s. Ultimately, I left the film industry for a variety of reasons, but I still just couldn't get rid of this notion that I wanted to write and tell stories. And so it was really when I was about 39 that I realized, we don't get to do this twice, and I'm not getting any younger. So I had lost that sense of fear of rejection and the intimidation that goes along with that. And because honestly, there's nothing to lose. There's only something to gain, and there's a lot to lose if you don't try. So that was when I started writing essays and got my feet wet. And it was really about a year into essay writing that I had an idea. I submitted it to the New York Times, the Modern Love column, and I had no idea that it was difficult. I know now it's very difficult, but I didn't know that then. And about a week later, I got an email from the editor saying, "I like this." And that was kind of it. He at the very bottom wrote, "Let's talk about it." I still didn't understand if this meant he was going to publish it or he wanted me to revise it, but we wound up talking. And then at the end of the conversation, he said, "So this is going to run probably around this month." And he just wanted to talk through whether everything I wrote was true. And also, it was about my husband and how we met. And so he wanted to make sure that he'd be okay. And I had not yet told my husband I'd even submitted this.
Oh my gosh.
But I said, "Oh, I'm sure he'll be fine." But it was really that, validation from him that enabled me to continue writing. And at that point, anytime I had an idea, I sat down and it was a catharsis to write about it. And it was even more rewarding to have people tell me they related and feedback from anyone who wrote it or read it rather. So I submitted to Feller and then the Sunlight Press and Chicago Story Press. And so I did get a variety of publications under my belt, but I had an idea for a novel. Again, started out with no clue, and wrote a novel. And I don't remember exactly. I mean, I might have been around 41 at this point, and that novel will never see the light of day. I made every mistake possible in both creating the novel and then querying agents. No idea how to write a query letter. Nothing. So that went nowhere. But it did propel me to want to figure this out. And I then set out mostly online, trying to figure out how do you write a query letter? How do you network? How do you, and I wound up joining this group called Pitch to Published, and that was very helpful. They had agents come on every week and dissect query letters. So I really was able to hone my query letter through that and then started meeting other writers, which is invaluable to meet other writers and talk to them about their experience and their journey. And I, at this point, because I have some knowledge, I like to impart anything that I've learned to other writers who are just starting out. So that book that I wound up writing, the second book, I did query and I had more success and traction with my query letter. But ultimately, that book also went in a drawer. And so it was Gap Year, which has now been published, was my third one. And just, I think in general, the more you practice, the more you get it. And I think I had gotten, to the point where I'd figured out how to create a novel, a beginning, a middle, an end, and not hopefully lose my reader along the way. And I'd figured out the query process. And so I did wind up getting an agent. And we went on submission. It was a very brief submission. She was a new agent. I don't think she was that well connected. And ultimately, just our communication didn't work for either one of us. So we parted ways. And on a kind of a whim, I thought, I just want to see the character Jane out in the world. I think people will relate to her. I like her. And that was when I submitted directly. I'd learned that you can submit to some presses directly. And I submitted to Egret Lake Books. And within a couple of days, she wrote me back and said, I love this. Let's talk about it. And again, I still didn't know it's this an offer, and it became clear it was. And then she actually sent me an offer letter on New Year's Day, which was like the best way ever to start 2025. And here we are.
Oh my gosh, there's so much in that story. I barely know where to follow up, but there's so much in there. But what I love is you really kind of brought to light for people who might be thinking maybe someday I'll write something of, you can write a book, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's gonna hit the light of day. There is so much of a business to it. There is self-publishing, and I'm a self-published author, and that's a great example of if you are that committed to getting it out in the world, you can make it happen. Whether or not it gets sold is a whole other story, but there are pathways. But even talking about the skills and the knowledge and the connections and all sorts of things behind the business of becoming a published author, you brought a lot of that to light of how frustrating that really can be. And it doesn't matter how good of an author you are or how good of a writer you are. Sometimes if you aren't going through the right pathways, you're just not going to find success.
True. And I do think there are so many good writers and so many good books out there that will never see the light of day because either people give up too soon or they don't know the right pathway to take. One thing that I have learned is no matter what, don't be afraid to ask for help. So if I don't know the right way to do something, I will find the person who knows and I will bug them until they tell me because I don't know. I think I've lost my sense of shame in this whole process of, asking people for things and also then offering in return anyone who want. I did a signing on Saturday, and a woman just she needed a seat. She didn't know I was an author, and I had my book there, and anyone who approached me, I would talk about my book, and maybe they would pick it up, and maybe not. I don't know. And she said, "Can I just sit here? I'm so tired." And I said, "Oh yes, go ahead." And so she's sitting there, and we chatted a little, and then the bookstore owner came over, and she was introducing herself to this woman. She thought she was with me, and the woman said, "No, I'm not with her. We just met." And she said, "Oh, you're an author?" And I said, "Yeah." I said, "This is my book." And I told her a little about it, and she picked it up, and she said, when the bookstore owner left, she said, "I'm an author, but no one in my family knows this, and no none of my friends know, and I haven't finished the book." And so I said to her, I said, "Here's my info. If you have questions or any, feel free." And she said, "Oh my God, are you serious?" And I said, "Yeah. I mean, if I can give back anything, I think it's good karma."
Absolutely. I get that sometimes. In my organizing world as Clever Girl Organizing, I'm known enough in enough circles that I'll get people, especially if I go to a conference or an event where I'm being featured, people will come up to me and, fangirling me in some ways, which is I will never get used to. But the idea of like, oh, you could just, here's my number, call me, get some time. Well, I'm happy to talk. And there's we all started somewhere. We all started with like no experience and no knowledge. And the idea that we can continue to support other people, especially in my case, other women, like literally have a whole podcast for women, right? That this has become important to me to say, I can't just be a receiver in life. I really want to be continue to be a giver. And sometimes people don't know that they are allowed to ask for that. And so it's a gift, I think, to be able to find those people who are like, oh, I know I can help you. I know we can do
Absolutely.
this. Yeah.
Absolutely. So
Yeah.
anyway, back to the previous point, I think it is the authors who persist who wind up succeeding, whether their product is better or worse or on par with what's out there. It's the ones that keep going. And I truly believe that's true because it's a rough industry and you have to be tenacious. So, and for me, it's not, people always ask me, "Oh, have you ever thought about quitting or giving up?" And I say no, because it's something I love doing. So why would I stop doing something I love doing? Yes, it can be frustrating. I mean, I'm querying agents again right now, and it's frustrating, but I'll keep going, because why not?
It sounds like you didn't really even pick up writing until much later in life. So the idea, in some ways, it's still kind of a new passion that you're still learning at. It's not like you're like, oh, I've been doing this 30 years. Okay, I'm kind of over it, right? It's still kind of new.
It is.
The other thing that what you talked about reminds me, I'm going to switch to the book. So I'll give my summary of what I think the book is about, which is it follows Jean, who is 46, and like within a 2-day period, puts her only child, her daughter, on a plane to go spend her like legit gap year after high school, in another country. Her husband tells her he's leaving her for another woman, and in her career, she's a lawyer, no, an accountant.
Yes.
An accountant. She's an accountant, and her boss tells her either rise up to this new occasion or you can leave. So all this goes on at once. She embraces that she is can take her own gap year. I'll see you, and pursues this lifelong ambition of hiking Cotopaxi, which is a volcano in Ecuador, which she's been dreaming about for decades but never done. Gets on a plane. Goes to Ecuador and says, I'm doing this. But just like you in the, I don't know how to publish a novel. I'm just going to start trying to do this. And I don't know anything. And I don't know how to write a query letter. Like Jane is woefully unprepared for the challenge and the adventure ahead. And everything in the book is about kind of what comes to her in re self-reflection and identity and questioning. And I finally maybe have the opportunity to do what I really want in life as soon as I figure out what that is. Just like one hike at a time throughout Ecuador.
Yes, that is absolutely true.
Okay.
All of that. Very good summary.
Great, great. But it was just, I was kind of struck by when you're like your own history, like I'm just gonna be a novelist. I'm gonna write a book. I'm gonna get published. Wait, I don't know how to do this. I'm not good at it. I need training. I need help, right? There's Laura in the book who's just definitely a helper, and other people who are encouraging. And it just really feels very much like an kind of a relatable journey between Lindsay and Jane there.
It's so funny because I had not drawn that parallel. Now that you say that, it's absolutely true. It's not that it was an impulsive decision, but it was something I'd been wanting to do. And finally, just as you were saying in the beginning, because of COVID, I had more time. And it was pre-COVID that I started writing the essays, but the book really writing started during COVID when there was very little to do. I think a lot of people started writing books during COVID, but yes, you're right. I didn't have any clue. And it's funny because some people have commented, "Oh, I like the book, but she really has no clue." And sometimes you just have to jump in with 2 feet, though. Otherwise, you might never do it. And I did try to make that clear that Jane was never an impulsive person until she was. And if she didn't impulsively decide to take this journey, she knew that if she started planning and doing all the things that she would normally do, she would never have gone. So she had to just do it. And so, anyhow.
No, I think you're right. I think that does come across in the book that the whole thing felt very counterculture and counter identity to her, and to everyone around her also felt that it was counterculture to who she was. And I am enough of a person that when I've made changes, right? So I started my business 13 years ago. I was 42. I had been in human resources for 20 years, which was something I thought I would was. For sure, going to do that was going to be my whole career. The idea that I would change that or abandon that was never something I thought about even a year earlier. Got laid off and found myself with kind of a what next. And I had always been thinking about professional organizing. I'd seen it on a TV show 10 years earlier, and I was like, oh, wait a minute, I think this might be me. And I was in that moment at 42, and my husband and I kind of thinking about, like, well, of course, I'll just go get another HR job. Of course, I'll go do that. And it was an opportunity to say, well, wait a minute. If not now, when? And I may not get this chance again. Or when I get the chance, it won't be to do it in the way that I know I can do it today. So being able to take a calculated risk, but a leap, not, nonetheless, to try something I had no experience with. And similarly, like, oh, writing a book versus getting a book published, it's like, oh, I can organize, but I don't know how to run a business. I don't know how to get customers. I don't know how to build a website. Like all the things that go into the concept of pursuing a dream can knock you on your butt a little bit. And it does take a little bit of that resilience and the persistence and the, okay, I'm going to try again. I'm going to try again. I'm going to try differently. I'm going to ask for help. All of that. I think for somebody to say, it's a little bit mind over matter, right? You're just going to decide you do it. And hopefully the talent catches up.
Yes, I absolutely agree. And congratulations on your journey.
Thank you.
And it seems like your decision paid off. So that's
Thank
awesome.
you. Thank you. I love that I get to reinvent myself all the time and I'm not tethered anymore. It really was a breakthrough for me to say, it's okay for me to decide at 42, I'm going to do this. And at 43, it can be something different. And that's a freedom that only comes with shedding so much of that.
And I think again, it's when else am I going to have the chance to do this? So, never is
Right.
the answer. And yeah, I mean, I still have maintained parts of my identity that were there prior to me deciding to write a book. I mean, I'm still practicing physical therapy, but part time, and still raising kids and doing all those other things. And fitness is a big part of my life, so I make time every day to an hour to run or take a class or something. So none of those things went away as part of my identity. But I embraced this thing that I'd always wanted to do and just had a way too much fear when it came to that. So, yes, go on.
Did you think of yourself as an author first and a physical therapy second now?
It's so funny because I still, like, when people ask me, what do you do? I say I'm a physical therapist, but then I also say, and I'm a writer. But there was a long time where I didn't feel legitimate. And my daughter, who's 15, she would sometimes be with me when someone would ask me, what do you do? And I'd just talk about being a physical therapist because, I have the doctorate in physical therapy, I have the certificate framed, and that feels real. And my daughter would interject, Mom, you're also a writer. You have a book. I said, oh, yes. So I'm also a writer, which people are far more interested in that than being a PT. But anyhow, yes. So it's been something that I feel like I'm both. It's not an either or. But it's been hard to put writer first.
And I have to assume balancing time. You just kind of me mentioned, right? We've got kids. You've got this part-time significant career, right? Doctor of physical therapy is a serious career, and trying to do writing and shopping for agents again and things like that. How do you balance your time? How are you balancing priorities these days?
Well, I think obviously family is number one. If my kids need me, that's number one. So the majority of the me time comes when they're at school or in the summer. They both have activities that they have to do. So I take that time for me. So I can make my own schedule as a PT. And I've gotten to the point where, and I used to feel guilty spending time writing, maybe because I wasn't making money doing it. And it was actually my husband was very sweet, I guess, when he said, why aren't you taking time to write as well? So I said, you're right. I don't, I said, and I told him the truth. I said, I feel guilt that I'm not contributing anything. It's for me. It's all for me. It's hard to take time for things that are just for you. And I started carving out a day or two. I've gotten to the point where I'm good at utilizing an hour if I have it. I used to think it has to be a whole day or I'm not going to get anything done, which is actually very untrue. I am not productive if you hand me 5 hours. I will get up and have a snack or go pet my dog. Or if I have 2 hours, I have my butt in the chair and I'm writing and I'm very productive. So sometimes I'll have days where I'll just schedule a couple patients and then I'll also carve out those 2 hours of writing. Just depends on the week, but I make sure that I do have both for me to feel some sense of satisfaction. And then, the rest of my day is the kids, being a mother, and that's fine too.
It's really interesting you talk about the managing the time for writing and productivity, because I've spoken with a number of authors who will say, I can write for an hour, but after an hour, I'm not as good of a writer anymore, right? That's not my second hour is not as good as my first. So I've learned the hard way. Stop scheduling the second. Like, it's just not good. Or I can't, maybe I could go away for a writer's retreat and spend the whole weekend, but I have to have nothing else that's going to pull for me. And I have to have some good ideas and it's got to be the right place, right? So it's not like you can just decide, like, oh, from 3 to 3:15, I'm going to be very inspired and I'm going to write 1,000 words, right? That's not how this works. And you kind, I assume, kind of only learn that through trial and error and through what went wrong.
Yes. So I will say this, when I'm in a revision stage, I can sit there for 5 hours. The blank page still daunts me. But when there is, when there are words on the page, I can pass hours sitting there and revising. So that's where I'm at right now. So I will carve out larger blocks, but if it's a matter of, I have to now produce the words. I have to create something new. Shorter periods of time work better for my attention span. I always thought attention span would get better as I got older, but it is not true. Because I went back to grad school in my early 30s, and I've always been a diligent student. I mean, in high school, I could sit for 8 hours and study. Even in college, I could go hours and study and be productive. And I thought it would be the same way going back to school when I was 31. It was not the same. I mean, 2 hours and I was looking for something else to do. So, I have learned that my attention span is short now. And that's okay.
It
I just
is.
have to be productive in that short period of time.
Right, you get it's that same self-reflection of knowing like what are my strengths, what are my limitations, and how do I build my plans around those, and as opposed to trying to get the rest of it to bend to my will.
Right. I will also say that having deadlines makes me very productive. If I just have this long, gaping canyon of time ahead of me, I will do nothing. So I have to find a way to make a deadline for myself. For example, I signed up on purpose for a virtual writers conference mid-June, and I signed up to pitch some agents. So I know my manuscript has to be perfect in case they ask to read it. And that's good for me, though, because that forces me to, and I did a third round of revisions in 2 weeks because of that, and sent it off to a beta reader. And now I'm on a fourth round. I'm hoping this is my last round. But it makes me so much more productive when I know there's a looming deadline, than just this amorphous amount of time.
I think when people learn that about themselves, like what motivates them, and they can build that into how they live, whether it's, writing or anything else you're trying to do or trying to accomplish in your life, I think it unlocks so much. And when you think about it, right, everything you talk about, high school and college and graduate school, those are all deadline driven, right? They tell you when your work is due. They tell you when there's an exam. They tell you when the semester's over, whether you like it or not. And
Right.
then and you say, oh, okay, I can manage that. And then you get out in the real world and you realize you need to build your own systems to be successful. Lots of people don't figure that out.
Yeah, no, I also will, for example, reach out. I have some beta readers now, and I will tell them, I will have this to you on this date. And then I will have to hold myself to that because they're carving out their time for me. So, it's so helpful to have that for me. I don't know if other people operate that well, but
Again, when you know what works for you, build your world around it. I'm curious. You're working on a new book. Are you still working in kind of the Gen X, older millennial women as protagonist space?
yes, I
Yeah.
am. So my protagonist in this one is 45. This is actually the book that I wrote, the second book that I wrote, and she was 30, 35, maybe slightly younger. I can't remember. It was so many years ago. But I took that premise and then I threw out the whole manuscript and started on page one. I had a totally different idea, because there's some magical element to it. I don't normally write anything that's remotely fantastical, but in this case there's that element, and but it's still women's fiction. It's still very much about a woman who has gotten to a point in her life where, her marriage is getting stale. They're not by any means getting a divorce, but it's just they're not communicating well. Her kids are on the verge of leaving the nest, and she's become somewhat invisible in the family because she's devoted so much of her time to being mother and wife and put her own needs and wants on the back burner. So it's again about rediscovering yourself, who you actually want to be, but with a very different storyline. So I mean, obviously, I like writing about that. Maybe I should look inward. But it's my therapy. So it's, the elevator pitch is sliding doors meets stranger than fiction.
Sliding Doors is one of my favorite movies of all time. I can't wait to read it. I'm curious about kind of the marketplace for stories about mid-40s something women, right? And how did you find that as you started with the query letters and the pitching?
So initially, when I queried Gap Year, I did get a lot of very nice feedback from editors at bigger houses, but I felt like overwhelmingly the sense was we don't know how to position a character of this age. Readers want at the probably at the pinnacle of age would be in the 30s, and particularly if there's any romantic element. But I feel like that has sharply, like today has sharply veered from that sentiment. I think that there's a voracious appetite for older protagonists now, and more books are coming out. And I feel like television actually led the way with this because there were so many romantic comedies and series that feature an older protagonist, and they're being devoured. And so I think that now more books are churning out with older protagonists and are being well accepted. And for example, off the top of my head, Zibby Owens, who is a publisher, a lot of her books, almost all of them, feature older protagonists and seem to do very well. And I think more and more editors are getting on board with this, so I'm not going to make my characters younger. I don't know how to write about a younger character. I can have a mother-daughter relationship because I have one myself, but I can't write from the point of view of somebody who's in high school or maybe in college, only if I'm reflecting back. But I do think that more and more people are wanting to read these stories. I see it on social media. Yes, there's, please put these stories out there. I want to read them. So I think it's shifting for the better.
I love that it's shifting, and I love that you're seeing it as well in multiple media sources, right? I think about, you're right, I think about TV, not as much movies, but I think TV and scripted series, and especially limited series, it's just more and more featuring women in their 40s and 50s, and quite frankly, actresses in their 40s and 50s and 60s, which I love seeing, for them to be able to play powerful roles. But I think there is such a market for, and it's not just a market of women who want to see women on screen, right? I think it's just a broader appetite for those kinds of series and that kind of content. And the books, you think about, it's very easy to put your book in like a beach read category, right? Summer's coming. Great. It is a great book to read on it's a better book to read on the beach in Ecuador if they have beaches. I don't know much about Ecuador, but I want to come back to that. And but the idea of saying like, oh, I don't have to read books about women in their 20s who are, it's another Bridget Jones Diary. Like I went through all of those when I was that age. So to be able to see, as I'm committed to with this whole podcast, like women in their 40s and 50s finding reinvention and new identities and taking risks. I love seeing that there's more content
Yes.
for that.
And I think you'll continue to see more of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because
Good.
I have a lot of author friends, and more seeing them produce books with older protagonists. So I think it's coming.
Good. I want to go back. I just mentioned Ecuador. I want to go back because I think I have to say about reading the book, I clearly know nothing about Latin America and that geography. And you do such a deep dive into Ecuador and the Galapagos and so many things. So tell me about your connection with this space and with this region.
So I spent, I think you mentioned it in the beginning, but I did a traditional gap year. I was accepted to college my senior year of high school and then deferred. And I went with a group called American Field Service to Ecuador. So I was 18, 19. So I spent a whole year there. And then I actually went back for the following summer and worked in the Galapagos for the summer. And then, two summers later, I spent another whole summer there because I did my research for my college thesis in Ecuador. I was an anthropology major, so I had to write an ethnography, and I set mine in Ecuador. So I have done extensive travel throughout the country. I mean, I didn't feature everywhere I've been in the country in my book, but I highlighted some of my favorite places. And I know, and I knew while writing that it had changed markedly. So I also did a tremendous amount of research to make sure that it was as accurate as I could make it, having not been there since 1996. And I'm still in touch with a lot of the people that I met when I lived there as an exchange student. Thankfully, because of social media, we can stay in touch. And I actually, last summer, I had not seen one of my when at my high school, I was one of two exchange students in the high school, and the other woman, she was from Quebec and only spoke French, and I only spoke English when we first arrived. But around mid-year, both of us were much more fluent in Spanish, and so we became close friends. And we did a little traveling together, and but only communicated in Spanish. And I hadn't seen her in 30 years because just life. And we had a little reunion in Montreal last summer, and it was like no time had passed. It was amazing. And it was just funny because she still doesn't speak English.
And you still don't speak
And I still
French.
don't speak French, so we had to communicate in Spanish, and it was just very
Oh my
funny.
gosh.
But we had such a nice time catching up, and hopefully, I've invited her to come to California, so we'll see.
Well, the book really has a whole aspect of being a love letter to Ecuador for sure. And I learned a lot about it. And really, you brought so many of these small towns and villages to life, and the food. You brought a lot of it to life, and it really sparked some intrigue for me about visiting there. That said, I will never hike a volcano. None of the, not, and I think that was the other part about this book too, right? You're obviously a knowledgeable hiker because you spoke about hiking, in all ways, but certainly hiking this volcano with real technical details.
So thank you. I love hiking. I do, but I have never climbed a volcano. I did not climb Cotopaxi any of the times that I was there. But I felt like she had to overcome some massive obstacle for her to get past, her life stage in order to get to the next stage. So I did about 2 months of research before I even started writing about Cotopaxi because I didn't want it to seem inauthentic. And I did have several friends who attempted to climb it. The third summer I was there, a few friends that I there were actually some people from college who happened to be there for other reasons, and they went and tried and only made it to base camp. It's very high, so they couldn't go on. And so I thought about their experiences, but then I did a deep dive into figuring out what this would look like and feel like and what equipment you would need and how you would have to prepare. And that also then played into all the ways that Jane was ill prepared.
Yeah. No, again, it sounded it comes across as very authentic, and it comes across as very knowledgeable. I don't have the knowledge to say, oh, that's weird that she chose those boots instead of this. I never would have done that. So I'm enough of an ignorant reader that that's lost on me. But just how you talk about, gee, I spent 2 months researching and spent a lot of time revisiting Ecuador to make like research wise to make sure it still reflected things that I remembered from 30 years ago. I think that that's another hidden part to the life of a writer. It isn't just, can I create some interesting characters and a compelling storyline? There's so much more work that goes into it that people don't necessarily appreciate.
Oh, definitely. I mean, unless you're writing a memoir, there's probably has to be some element of research to make sure, like my new book, there's some scenes in Italy that, and I've been to Italy, but not these places. And so I had to do some research. Okay, what does this look like? What are the customs? What are the foods in that area? We were supposed to visit there, in April, and we had to cancel our trip because my dog being sick. But we'll get back there, and then I can see in person whether I'm accurate. I think I am.
Yeah, I don't think anybody should write about Italy without getting on the ground and enjoying it, 'cause you don't want to take that risk. You definitely should go.
Oh no, I will. And it's a very small aspect of my book, so I'm not terribly worried about
Yeah.
that. I was worried about making sure that everything I wrote about in Ecuador was accurate because so much of the book takes place there. But I did fall in love with that country when I was there, and I think it's becoming more popular to visit there, but it's been an overlooked tourist destination, and it's a mistake because there's so much to see and do there, and it's a tiny country, so you can do it all in a few weeks, and get a very good sense of what, Ecuador is like.
Yeah.
So I recommend highly to anyone who's considering it to go.
And I've had Galapagos on my list for some time. So it was another kind of revisiting for me of that, being like, oh, that's right. Don't forget about this. This is still a place you want to go.
Before it's not there anymore.
Yeah.
Yes, it's unlike anywhere you will ever see in the world.
So again, I really enjoy the book. I enjoy the story. I enjoy the characters, and I love what you turned on in terms of just introducing me to a whole different part of the world. I want to switch over to the quicksand three, which are the three questions I ask everyone on the show, and then I want to come back and tell people how they can learn more about you and find your book and just learning a little bit more of everything that you've shared with us today.
Thank you.
So the first question is, when you are kind of stuck because you've been procrastinating or avoiding something, what's a way that you get yourself up and focus on it?
For me, it's honestly exercising. If I go for a run, let's say I'm procrastinating because I just don't know or I can't think of what I in particular with writing, but in general, just thinking through any issues in life, my head is absolutely clear when I'm running, and I don't listen to music. I actually have started listening to podcasts when I'm running, but that's a more recent thing. But in general, I just allow any thought to come into my head when I'm running, and it oftentimes works. Either that or taking a drive, which I know sounds strange, but ideas come to me when I'm driving about all sorts of things, whether it's how do I progress the story, or I had an argument with my husband and I want to think about it. It'll help me just unstick my thought process, those two things.
Oh, that's great. I have an iPhone, and I created a shortcut on my iPhone for when I'm driving, that allows me to, create a text, a notes text of whatever it is I want to remember, because I'm definitely going to forget. So I also love driving to get my mind a little clearer, and I get a lot of clarity. But then if I don't pull over right away and write down what it is I just got clear about, I will forget it before I get home. So I created this shortcut, and I say, I say, save my thoughts is what I called it, and say, all right, what's the note? And it gets it all out, and then I can forget about it.
I need to do that.
Yeah, it's been a game changer for me, right? And I when I talk about what it was like for me to write my book, I tell people to be prepared for the inconvenient epiphany, right? It's in the shower or when you're driving. Like, you need a plan, because those are going to come once your brain's in that space.
Middle of the night. That happens to me too. And I don't keep a phone in my room, but my iPad is there because I read on that. So I will send myself an email quickly with like three words. I don't want to interrupt my sleep that much, but just so it jogs. And then I'm able to go back to sleep.
Yes, smart. Next question. If time and money and era and history and skills weren't an issue, what would be a career or a job you might have liked to try?
I always, now looking back, I wish I had pursued something in the publishing industry, to be honest. I wish I had started at the bottom and worked my way up in a publishing house or even a smaller, it doesn't matter to me at this point, but I wish that I had made a career out of reading. So if time and money and everything else were an issue, I would start now at my, 52. But I don't know if I'll get to do that at this point. So I read for pleasure and I write instead.
That's much further than and much closer than most people are going to get to a career they might have tried.
Yes.
Good. And then finally, when life gets chaotic, what's a way that you recharge or hit the reset button?
I take a nap. I found that if I just take a 20-minute nap, I have a totally different perspective when I wake up. And in fact, if I take longer than a 20-minute nap, I don't feel good if I wake up. I'm groggy, I'm sluggish, but it's just that 20-minute nap. Like, it has to be a part of most of my days. And my days are pretty chaotic and go, go, go. So I carve out that time of 20-minute nap and I set an alarm so that I wake up.
I was just going to ask that. And were you somebody who could power nap in college and like this was something you've done your whole life?
It's something I have done my whole life, except probably when I was very young and I hated when my mother would say, "You need a nap." And she was right. But, that of course meant that I was crying and I don't want a nap and but probably since I was in college, even in college, I would set an alarm, but I would take a nap every day and it made me more productive. And yeah, so
I'm
that.
incredibly jealous of the nappers. I don't fall asleep quickly, so a 20-minute nap probably takes me an hour, and that's not the point. And I like even in college, I knew so many people like, oh, no, I'm just gonna power nap. Like, oh my gosh, I just don't have it in me. So I'm jealous of the people like you who have mastered it and turned it into a strength. Congratulations.
I put my head down, and I next thing I know, my alarm is going off. So I must fall asleep very quickly. I must be very tired.
Right, maybe that's it. I love that. Good. So, Lindsay, thank you so much. Tell us more about Gap Year or how we can follow your writing or get on a list to find out about a new book soon.
So Gap Year is available anywhere books are sold. Of course, Amazon, Barnes and Noble, but then also if you go into any bookstore, it can be ordered for you. And then as far as finding me, I have a website, lindsaygoldsteinauthor.com. I also frequently am on Instagram and Threads at Goldstein Lindsay. And then I am on Substack, lindsaygoldstein.substack.com. So those are the places you can find me.
Good. I will make sure that we have all of that in our show notes. Thank you so much for being a part of Surfing the Quicksand. I really enjoyed this, and I am excited to see who in this world ends up picking up Gap Year. Again, a great summer read or any other time. This is coming out right before I think people are doing their heavy summer book shopping, so I hope that makes the list.
Oh, well, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And yes, I hope people pick up Gap Year and enjoy.
Thank you. I hope that you got intrigued to check out Gap Year. Again, it's a really fun read. I really enjoyed the character, Jean, and her story. And I love that our conversation with Lindsay today, that I found some parallels between Jane and Lindsay that she herself hadn't even thought about before. I think that's one of the things I love about being a podcast host is meeting people and getting to hear their stories and being able to bring my own perspective of what I'm hearing to you. I hope you enjoy this. I hope you pick up Gap Year, and I'll see you again soon.